Okay. Addiction and Redemption, bringing more of this great stuff to you. I'm on a roll. Got to go with it. You got to follow the whims of inspiration. You got to capitalize on your inspiration and capitalize when you feel inspired. I came to you in the last episode, which was yesterday. I recorded it with the flu, and I'm one day past that episode feeling a lot better, which is good. The flu, like I said in the last episode, always gives me an opportunity to slow down. So let me just check my audio. Yeah, okay. I want to make sure the mic was plugged in. So yeah, here we are. Another episode of Addiction and Redemption. I'm Dave Keenest, brought to you by Keenest Coaching. Reach out to me if you'd like to quit your job and start a business. Those are the funnest people to work with, because people that actually, like my core audience, that the people I love to work with rather more than any other type of person, is people that do well in corporate and want to quit that world and create something new, because that world is filled with very smart, very brilliant, very motivated, very dependable people. And when you're able to take that level of motivation and direct it in, for lack of a better way of expressing it, purely self-serving ways, like I want to work for myself and not answer to anybody else, all those leadership skills, all that integrity, it transfers into the creation of something that they very often can't comprehend. So anyway, there's my little plug. But onto the continuing of the story. So I kind of took this diversion into like emotional programming and childhood and all that stuff. And we're all subject to emotional programming. We're all subject to David Hawkins says basically we're all born with this, you know, more or less defective organs thing called a brain. Right. And it's just subject to all of these environmental influences, not to mention like parental influences, school influences, neighborhood influences. And it's a miracle that any of us ever get anywhere. Right. And then the brain encounters adolescence and becomes an adolescent brain. And then you've got drugs and the opposite sex and relationships and bullying and all this other stuff. And it's really a miracle I survived all that shit. Right. And it's a miracle many of you did, too. And so that just kind of begs the question regarding, you know, where is the power greater than ourselves? What's the role of that in all of this? And how does it watch over us to see that, you know, we don't freaking kill ourselves? I mean, my God, the fact that traffic functions the way that it does, you know, more or less functionally, it's just like, what does that suggest? You know, there's got to be some kind of something watching over all of us. Or maybe we're all just, you know, separate entities. Who knows? I don't care if you believe that. I just think that a life without some kind of God or a higher power or angelic forces as a part of it is just not really any fun. You could tell the people that don't have a God in their life, and they're just kind of like, you know, there's just this lack of something, you know, whatever. I used to be that way. It's no big deal. God, the God that I know, doesn't give a rat's ass. But I'm going to kind of put this story back on its chronological track. So, I quit corporate. I quit corporate in May of 2010, or it was the last weekend of April, I believe, of 2010. And I just said to hell with it. I had gotten into law of attraction. I had blown up my sales numbers. I was just kind of lost interest in this job. I had this boss by this point. His name was Pete. Pete was a good guy. He's just kind of the definition of a middle manager. If there was ever a definition of a middle manager, it would be Pete. I don't even know if he was he might have been the guy below middle manager. But I actually think he ended up taking over the office, but because my buddy John, who had hired me, he got fired. So there's just this guy, Pete, and me and Pete had a great working relationship. I always respected him. I thought he was a good guy. You know, he's still a good guy, I'm sure, out there in the software world. He might be listening to this. But he's just like this corporate company guy. He kind of like played the guitar on the side, you know, and like I said, him and I had a good working relationship. But one day I just quit and, you know, responsibly gave my pipeline over to Pete with, you know, kind of the status of each one of the deals that, you know, were likely to come in. But really it kind of all dried up because all my enthusiasm had dried up. So I wasn't really rocking it too much there anymore. And that was it. I just sort of walked away from that world. I had recently been promoted to senior inside senior inside executive of blah, blah, blah territory, you know, it was just kind of like, okay, what am I, you know, this sort of automaton in this sales machine. I was a little bit older than everybody else in the office. It was just a lot of, it was an office full of kind of bros, you know, just bros, white hat wearing kind of like former frat boys. They weren't all like that, but just kind of imagine the stereotypical office filled with the stereotypical mid to late 20s guys who go out on Friday and get hammered and, you know, maybe get in fights and, you know, maybe one of them is prone to like violence and committing sexual assault. Just, you know, just your typical splice of America playing itself out on the sales floor there. And excuse me one second. Still can't get rid of this cough, but feeling like lifetimes better than I was yesterday. But this is just kind of the environment that I just got sick of. And I want to reiterate how grateful I am for having gotten that job, because that job just got me back on track completely. But all good things come to an end. So I just walked away and proceeded to go home to where I was living on the beach and just sit on the beach. And I spent that entire summer, the summer of 2010, on the beach. And it was here that I decided to take my first ayahuasca journey. And I had, the way I got introduced to ayahuasca was, it goes back quite a ways. I had met this girl. I think I mentioned the crazy guy that I was working for when I first got sober with the fake charity and whatnot. But as a result of knowing him, I found this sweat lodge community, this like spirit, Native American spiritual community. And I went to a few sweat lodges when I first got sober. And one of them, I got picked up by this girl, to go to the sweat lodge. And when we were driving there, she mentioned ayahuasca. She's like, "Oh, I just got back from Peru, yada, yada, ayahuasca journey." Now, I had seen a special on ayahuasca in, you know, a few months before that, within, you know, a few months of this conversation on the History Channel. And it was about the history of psychedelics. And it talked all about the Grateful Dead and their role in psychedelics and how they brought psychedelics to the mainstream. Essentially, the 60s basically brought psychedelics to the mainstream. But before they had been introduced to the mainstream, they had existed for centuries, if not millennia, in tribal cultures. And what the 60s did is it took with the advent, invention, and the popularization of LSD, it took the what had been sort of hidden in these tribal cultures, and it brought it out to the mainstream. And so the 60s were essentially a celebration of what had, I don't know if celebration is the best word, but the 60s essentially took what had been hidden and brought it to the mainstream. And that, you know, you could argue that the Grateful Dead single-handedly are the ones that were responsible for bringing it to the era that I took it in. Because the Grateful Dead were essentially just an acid band. I mean, they existed as a result. They got their start at the acid tests, and their entire phenomenon was essentially acid fueled and psychedelic fueled by psychedelic use. But the LSD boom of the 60s, like the Woodstock generation, that was the first introduction of LSD to the mainstream. Now, LSD, I think, originally was around in the early 50s, but it didn't really become popularized until the 60s. And a little-known fact, Bill W., the founder of AA, was a proponent of LSD use. And people don't like to know this, and I don't want to be blowing the anonymity of the program, but I guess I just did, so fuck it. But yeah, Bill W. also was an advocate of LSD use. And so my journeys into psychedelic use at 3 years sober, I kind of leaned on that fact. But anyway, I had met this woman at this sweat lodge, and she drove me to the sweat lodge and drove me back, and she mentioned ayahuasca, and she put me in touch with this other woman who was a shaman who did ayahuasca ceremonies in Chicago. And this neighbor of mine, he and I got to chatting on the beach one day. This is right after I quit. He was kind of part of introducing me to the Slav Attraction stuff. But I mentioned him that I had heard of ayahuasca and that I knew someone that I could do ceremonies with. And he expressed immediate interest. Now, he had never done any of this sort of thing. He had never done any drugs, actually. And so his interest was piqued because he was like this energy dude, this like healer kind of energy guy who was into like law of attraction and stuff. But I mentioned ayahuasca to him and he was immediately interested. And I was put in touch with this woman who shall remain nameless via this other woman. And I emailed her and she said there's a ceremony on, and it was like a week away or something. It was, I think I did my first ayahuasca trip was about, 2 or 3 weeks at the most after I quit. And so anyway, I'm sitting on the beach and I mentioned ayahuasca and we go to this woman's house one night. It was like a Friday or Saturday night and we go to her house and it's just this little tiny woman on the south side of Chicago. It was actually in Little Village, which is kind of by, Bridgeport. Excuse me, not Bridgeport, but there's another neighborhood, but like kind of like the deep south side, you know, like we're way in the south side, southwest side, kind of by 26th in California, but a little bit west of there. And we get to this woman's house and she's got the ayahuasca. Now, what ayahuasca is, it's a medicine from the Amazon rainforest that goes back, I believe, millennium. And it's comprised of the actual potion of ayahuasca. My voice just cracked there. The potion of ayahuasca is consists of a vine, a root. It's actually a vine. It's a very thick wooded vine. And the vine contains the spirit of ayahuasca. And what the ancient Amazonian tribes people have done, certain tribes, I don't know which ones, they mix the vine with this leaf. And the leaf, I believe, contains dimethyltryptamine, DMT. And neither one of them works by themselves. They have to be combined. And you pulverize the vine and mix the vine in a brew with these leaves and cook it down. And you're left with this very pungent, very, very pungent liquid. It's like dark brown. It just looks like swamp water. It's just like, just imagine like if the Amazon rainforest had like a bile associated with it or just a primitive substance. It's very, very, very gnarly. It's very pungent. It's dirty, but I don't mean dirty in the sense that like gross. It's just like earthy, like dirty. And a friend of mine once referred to it as the type of medicine that, you know, requires spoonfuls of sugar to help it go down, like this old school kind of mean tasting medicine. And I want to be clear here. This is, you know, some people call it drugs. I believe it's a medicine that really supports people in working through very deep rooted, very complex psychological, mental, spiritual, interdimensional, past life type of, you know, for lack of a better word, problems, right? And it's a psychedelic, so it's, you know, it causes massive hallucinations, visions, whatever it is you want to call them, but it penetrates into the subconscious in a way that I have yet to experience. And it takes you into the spirit world. And, you know, they're probably subject for other talks, but I ended up having encounters with angels and demons and all sorts of interdimensional beings, some of which were not very good, which I'm going to address later is, you know, the occult, I mean, O-C-C-U-L-T, occult-like nature of these types of journeys and whether or not they're really beneficial, and you know the notion that they can cause great harm and that there could very well be a rabbit hole that people end up in. You could end up in a rabbit hole as a result of indulging in some of these, indulging with the seductive nature of this medicine in particular. And it's not addictive. It's not an addiction in the same way that LSD is not an addiction, but it's an avenue or an access point to another world. And we don't really know what's going on in that world because it's not the human world. It's the spirit world or many spirit worlds or interconnected spiritual worlds, or the crossover between the human world and the spirit world, the earth world and the spirit world, and the heavenly world and the hellish world. And you really just don't know what's going on when you indulge isn't quite the right, partake, I guess would be the word, when you partake in the drinking of the ayahuasca. And, but anyway, here I am in this woman's kitchen, and, you know, we sit down to actually do the ceremony, and she does this thing called calling in directions, which you can Google if you want to find out what calling in the directions is. And then we get this little, basically just a little shot glass. My voice just cracked again. Little shot glass of ayahuasca, and you drink it, and then you wait. You drink the ayahuasca, and then you wait to see what starts happening to you. And I think I'm going to leave it off there. So we've left corporate. We've sat on the beach. We've befriended our neighbor at a deeper level. And now we're at an ayahuasca ceremony. And we're partaking of this sacred ayahuasca medicine, which is a hallucinogenic medicine from a hallucinogenic substance from the Amazon rainforest, comprised of a root and a leaf that catalyzes, I believe that's the right word, catalyzes the release of dimethyltryptamine from the pineal gland. I think that's how it goes down. You're welcome to do your own research there. But you ingest the DMT, and that allows for more DMT to be released, or maybe the DMT is released. You can check out the DMT. There's a documentary called DMT, The Spirit Molecule, I believe hosted by Joe Rogan, that you can, you know, really dive into and find out what you'd like about this medicine. I encourage y'all to get fascinated, as fascinated as I was. I can't say I go so far as to encourage you to take it, but you will take what you will from this talk. Does that make sense? You will take what you will from this talk. So thanks again, another episode of Addiction and Redemption, moving into the world of spirit medicine, and probably have to address this girl Robin at some point. Anyway, thanks for listening again. Have a beautiful night. Dave Keenest. Peace out.